Hello and welcome to the Happy Hour. I'm your host, Tony Yang, and joining me as always today is Clark Price. How are you doing, Clark? We don't have Alex today, but that's okay. I think he deserves a well-earned spring break.
It is spring break, and I am broken.
Oh, Lord.
No, I'm relaxing and busy day, some intensity. The general situation of what I consider to be madness taking place in Washington, D.C. And I think that the United States has entered a period of madness, and this is a time that this nation's will be tried to the limit, and I think we're not doing so well right now. We have abandoned the structure that has kept the peace for 80 years, and we have abandoned Western Europe, and I shouldn't say we. It's one person.
It's one person.
Yeah.
It's a cabal of people. It's not one person, but it's a cabal.
I think it is one. That cabal wouldn't exist without the one person.
He has
brought in other people into his a madness which has no rational explanation. I mean, Russia is a gas station with nuclear weapons, to quote Barack Obama. And
did he actually say that? Okay.
Yeah. And there is no advantage whatsoever unless here's what I think it is. I mean, if you look at Trump's comments, his public comments that he has made about the people that he admires in the world, the leaders that he admires, none of them, there is not a single one that
right.
is a leader of a democracy. Every single one of them is I met Kim Jong-un and we fell in love. He sent me a letter. And it was wonderful letter, just a beautiful letter. We're in love.
It's, yeah.
What? What an idiot!
Yeah.
What insanity! And then, the president, the leader of the of China, he's a tough guy. He's just a really tough guy and smart. He's really smart. And Vladimir Putin, who he likes the most. He has made this perfectly clear what he likes, who he feels an affinity with, and what he's saying is these are people who are like me.
Yeah.
They are people who are my kind of people, meaning that they're kleptocratic, and his greed is endless. They're kleptocratic. And they support other kleptocrats. And it has been suggested that what is happening here is the kleptocrats have gotten together and they're dividing up their territory.
Right.
And it looks like, hey, Trump's going to take, let's say
Greenland.
It like this.
Greenland, that's the next
one. Well, wait a minute. No. That's not what I was going to say. It's inclusive. What I'm going to say is exclusive of that. But no, so Putin gets Russia, of course, and Eastern Europe, if not Western Europe. And China gets Asia. And Trump gets North America.
Right.
And possibly Western Europe, although he's making lots of anti-European statements. The Signal chat that was recently released has these really bizarre statements like, I hate bailing out Western Europe again. Western Europe is sort of very important. And our traditional allies, I mean, what is wrong with these people? It really feels like we've gone through, you know, the Lewis Carroll looking glass as in Alice in Wonderland, and and where everything is different. It's upside down. It's reverse. It doesn't make any sense according to what your entire experience is in terms of what makes sense in the world. This is, there is no way to when thinking about this, to not come away from it thinking something extraordinarily sinister has happened, a sleight of hand,
right,
which should never have taken place. And anyone who's heard us have this discussion over the years now has heard me warning, why isn't Merrick Garland prosecuting this guy? Why, what's taking so much time? What is wrong with Joe Biden in terms of, why is he betting Donald Trump all smiles and handshakes at the inauguration after knowing what he knows? So my explanation is Biden really was mentally defective, that he was non compos mentis, and he wasn't thinking properly. He wasn't acting. He reasoned very superficially that no one who had committed January 6th could possibly be reelected.
Right.
That it just was inconceivable that such a bizarre freak such as Donald Trump could possibly be elected. But he was wrong because he did not, I'm quoting another person who if he hears this, he'll recognize it. He did not see, perceive that the DNA of American politics has been altered.
Right.
By Donald Trump.
Right.
This I think when the perspective of history is invoked over the course of years from now, it will have to be said that Donald Trump was a remarkable person, that he had a very powerful charisma such that he actually could memorize masses of people.
Mesmerize.
Yes, I didn't speak that well. It was the memorize versus mesmerize. masses of people in the way that Rasputin in Russian history was said to be able to mesmerize individuals or groups of people. And it may be that the talents that Trump and Rasputin had were parallel. It's just that in the case of Trump, he had the advantage of technology, which could be used to reach masses of people,
right,
where Rasputin could only deal on an individual basis. Something very bad and very destructive has taken place in the United States, which has changed the course of world history. And you know, over the time of my life, I thought, well, democracy is forever. The United States is forever. It was an experiment, but now it's a tried and tested and a thriving nation, which will go on. It's strong. The democracy gives it strength.
Right.
But in fact, it could be hacked, and it has been. It was suggested by Sinclair Lewis that when fascism comes to America, that it will be wrapped in an American flag and carrying a Bible. You know, one of the things that Trump is really, two of the things that he's really not very good at conveying is that he is a genuine patriot.
Right.
Who really believes that? he's
certainly
genuinely,
not his military leaders.
He genuinely loves money. And so, and then the another thing that he's not really good at is talking about his faith in Jesus Christ. That's because there's no faith in Jesus Christ. I think he believes that that religion is somewhat like people who devote their careers to the military in the defense of the United States, that it's for suckers and losers. And you know this because he holds the Bible upside down in front of an Episcopalian church.
It's worse than that. As an Episcopalian, it's even worse.
Please
than
go
that.
On.
It's even worse than that, right? The fundamental tenet of Christianity, as you and I, Clark, know, and I certainly have a deeper belief, and I own that, but you need Christ's atonement. You need forgiveness. We are not without sin. And the man literally said this, right? Right? The fundamental precept of...
There's nothing.
I haven't asked God for forgiveness.
Because...
He doesn't believe he needs to be forgiven.
He doesn't need any. Yeah. And he's never done anything wrong.
That is the most unchristian statement you could ever make.
I think more than being unchristian, it is unself-aware.
Right.
There's no humility in it. In a way, it's him not following the Bible, but the mafia dictums of Roy Cohn, which is never apologize.
Right.
Never admit to anything not wrong. Don't say that you have anything other than you're anything other than powerful. You're God, not God. You are. That's how you present yourself
right
to the world, as an epic creature of unlimited power, wealth, that's it. Power and wealth, money and power. That's all they want. I used to have a mentor as an attorney on the East Coast, Harvard Law. And he said, all they want is unlimited, inestimable riches and unlimited power. That's all they want, which is everything. They want everything. And by they, he's referring to criminals who use particularly the Republican Party as a vehicle to enter government and tap into the main line of wealth, which is the treasure created by the American people. And he has now brought in with him a number of people from South Africa, also referred to as the PayPal Mafia. And these are people who benefited, who are from another country, came to the United States, saw the system, saw how to exploit it, and benefited enormously from that system. But that is not enough, that they became richer than the dreams of unlimited avarice. They want it all. They want to take down democracy. And by the way, I just saw a report that Elon Musk's relatives, that he was growing up with them in Canada, were Nazis who were devoted to the destruction of democracy in North America. And they were forced out and went to South Africa. That's why he is from South Africa, because his family went there from North America due to the fact that they were ultra right-wing fascists who were opposed to democracy. And they went there where they could live in an apartheid situation. And then Elon Musk came back to North America, and with his, you have to give it to him, he did take a He didn't create Tesla, but he took it to a place of where it made him the richest man in the world. And
because
we're
the
in this
company's
situation.
overvalued. Because the company's overvalued.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Let's be honest. No auto case. Company. There are auto companies that are much larger. You know, let's not give him too much credit for being able to outsell and
I think right now that if it were an even playing field across the world, that BYD in China would utterly destroy Tesla in the marketplace.
Or ironically, as you and I have discussed with my purchase of a 2017 Chevy Bolt way back when, GM is actually making good electric vehicles and actually is the fastest growing electric car company in the United States by market share.
Let's just put an asterisk on that and say that particular car was subject to a gigantic recall.
Oh, yes, it was.
But it benefited the owners enormously because they got, what is it, LG, I think a Korean battery company.
We got the new batteries and, you know.
Brand new batteries in every single one of them.
And I do love the vehicle. I'm just saying this is an American product. And I find it ironic because now I'm proud. You know, it used to be a time, you know, it was like America, drive a Chevy. And that was like an uber form of like right-wing patriotism at some level to now the most patriotic
populist
yeah it was right. a bit of a populist thing. Now I'm like, I just want a Chevy because I don't want to buy that stupid Tesla.
Well, I own two Chevy electric hybrid, but they can also, they're serial hybrids, so they can be operated as EVs, and so I own two of them and they're really good.
Yeah.
And reliable and weirdly reliable. I mean, according to the owners groups, hundreds of thousands of miles reliable. And also other, I have another GM electric vehicle. That's a very nice car. So,
Well, that's just to say, like, with the right incentives, the government, and you don't need the brilliance necessarily. Well, I think you needed the market effect of Tesla to do it, to demonstrate.
Oh, Musk was a game changer. And so this is the complications of human beings. They can have aspects that are good, and sometimes they combine with aspects. I mean, Hitler, who is, I think, an apt comparison here.
Right.
Hitler did create the Autobahn, which we know as the freeway, the Volkswagen, the people's car. And I'm sure there was other things he did.
Yeah.
And he was a genuinely horrible person whose madness resulted in the deaths of tens of millions. And what we're seeing, and that was a time where world history was altered. And unfortunately for all of us here on this planet together right now, we're in another one of these times. And there are some forces gathering that are really, really bad. And it really is shaping up like the kleptocratic criminals and dictators of the world are making their move. And unfortunately, via some means, one of them has taken over the United States.
Right.
And there is no question in my mind, you can challenge me on this, that Donald Trump is a genuine fascist. And genuinely, he's on the verge of not listening to anything courts do. He's on the verge of sending in, he said this, we're going to send in soldiers to Greenland. And
let me frame it this way.
Well, why don't you just use his words? He said soldiers.
I would say,
are you going to moderate this? It's like, well, he's
no. I'm not going to moderate his words. I'm more talking about the actual implicit actions, right?
Implicit actions. Okay, go ahead.
The fact of the matter is, he said he's going to do those things until he does those things. But that's the problem of calling it a fascist.
I think we're beyond the like, oh, it's all bluster. He has torn apart Social Security. He's torn apart the internal apparatus. He's fired tens of thousands, probably well over 100,000 people. And now you're speculating that, oh, it could all be a bluster. Comments about Greenland. You're like poo-pooing it?
No. I am waiting to see if there is a counter reaction of some sort. And I think we're all waiting to see that. Like, and if that,
Front page of the New York Times today reported that his statements are backfiring and that the people of Greenland are in more and more in opposition.
Right.
There are two parties in Greenland. One of the leading one is very much opposed.
They're much more pro-independence than they are pro-aligning U.S., you know.
Well, and the other one, they do have a pro-Trump guy in that party, in the one that's less successful, less right. powerful. So I think there are some real... This is really happening. And that's what I'm stating. Right. I'm not stating that this is some sort of transactional fiction right. in order to stake a position in a negotiation and then
right.
and take your gaining. So why would anyone say this? And also, let's note that we have a person who is who seems to have no restraint in his arrogance, who sees that this is a territory which he says we need for national security, that is rich in minerals, and also as global warming advances, which he welcomes, by the way, because he's ignorant, as it advances, then there will be shipping lanes that he can also monetize. For what?
Right.
For himself, or for the kind of, I mean, what we have a situation where this guy is completely taken over the Republican Party, and the methods he used to do that, he's using to take over the rest of the United States. That's intimidation. Right. That's retaliation. He's willing to hurt anyone and to harm anyone. He's already said he's going to use the IRS to harass people. He has complete control over the Department of Justice, with which he can charge anyone that he wants to charge. You don't have to have much of an imagination to realize what he's modeling himself after. This guy is not George Washington.
Well, I would even say
he is Kim Jong-un. He is Hitler.
To your point, Clark, Elon's calling for investigation of Act Blue, which is...
Yeah, I'm well aware.
Yeah, but that's an outright attack on your political opponents and weaponizing the Department of Justice.
Yes, of course.
What
have I just been talking about?
Oh, no, you're not...
Dismissing his statements as bluster. He's actually acting on
it. Yeah, he's acting on it. Whether the term we've gone fascist or not depends on, and I don't know. I guess my line's a little different, and different historians have different lines on this. The actions are definitely fascist.
Let me help you with, you just said it. He is a fascist.
No, he is a fascist. Whether or not fascism has taken hold depends on what, if there is a counter reaction and what it is. And I you know, that's much
there harder to there is on. No counter reaction. The only thing I think what it is he's using a fascist tactic, which is a blitzkrieg.
Right.
He's moving. It's been 2 months and he's destroyed pretty much. He's installed a bunch of, let's be frank, imbeciles into the cabinet. And so that's, they're a bunch of vacuous yes people.
The bros, and, they're bros.
Let's not simplify and reductify this too much here. They're certainly idiots, and some of them, one of them's a bro. The rest of them, I don't think so. And we're talking, that's Pete Hegseth, of course. Right. And you, by the way, if you want to see bro talk. In a high government official, look at the Signal transcripts.
that was the most bro conversation.
Well, from him,
yeah.
He seems to be a very, to say he's unqualified is so obvious that it's not doesn't really deserve to be said, but he seems to be very obviously nervous and unsure of himself and performative. He's acting in a way in which he thinks that a person in that position should act, but doesn't really pull it off. He's because he's so unserious. He's just a bro, a tattooed, drunken, frat party bro.
Right.
And with no substance, judgment, or reasoning, he is what I would describe as an errand boy sent by grocery clerks to collect the bill, a line from Apocalypse Now, but very appropriate to use in this context. We're in a lot of trouble here as a nation. This is real, real damage being done to this country at a fundamental level, which they are conducting in such a way as to be irreparable. It is cruel. It is malicious. It is certainly unusual in the history of this country.
Right.
And I'm going to say, when this is all said and done, it's going to be viewed as a kind of a jiu-jitsu move by Russia, that Vladimir Putin, on the verge of destruction and chaos in his own country, has turned an asset created allegedly in 1987 and allegedly again nicknamed or given the code name Krasnov, has activated that person into the presidency.
Yeah.
And here's what it looks like to me, that he is a true believer. Trump is a true believer in whatever Putin told him, which may be something like, because he's 78 years old and most people at that age would be like, I'm going to spend my years now trying to do good, be reflective on my life and try to make the best of what I have left, not on a rampage of acquisition,
control, and
power.
You're also typically well aware of your frailty and your mortality once you reach that age. And this is we gave, I think deservedly so, a lot of, and we still are, I'm giving a lot of hate toward Chuck Schumer. You know, I mean, you've led us to here. You cannot handle the situation. You are not prepared for this.
Chuck Schumer is a convulsive embarrassment to the world.
We certainly said that about Joe Biden. He was.
I think the two of them are two birds of a very birds of a feather, a very bad feather.
Yeah,
and I think they are awful.
And not all septuagenarians are that way.
And here's what I have to deal with. I say this stuff to a lot of people who are friends of mine, and you know, I would say that they're often Democrats, and but he's a lovable guy, and he really did. And one person turned to me and said, "He is the finest president of my lifetime," and I'm going. He has handed this country to certain disaster. That's how good a president he was. He is completely out of touch with the reality of what was happening and what was happening inside of him. So it wasn't just the political landscape had completely changed, but he had changed, and his perception and reasoning powers were borderline nil. He had about seven people around him who were doing the policy stuff.
Yeah.
And his wife, Jill Biden, who I don't think will be viewed well by history, was pushing him to stay in it because it meant that she was still in it and she liked being the queen.
Yeah.
So the situation is not unilaterally been created. It's not just that Trump hollowed out the Republican Party and turned it into a Trojan horse to convey someone who couldn't be less American. Donald Trump has his nation is the nation of greed and domination.
Right.
And thievery. That's what he's loyal to. That's who he is. He is in no way does he represent or have anything in common with any previous American president, even the worst ones.
Right. Well, except maybe Roger Stone, but that's a.
What are you talking about?
Richard Nixon. Wasn't Roger Stone a Nixon guy?
Even Richard Nixon. you can say Roger Stone, who is a vile weevil or parasite, but when you're a historian, Richard Nixon could write and think and speak. He understood the world. Look at any interview with him. Go to those old David Frost interviews, which I think may have been done by the BBC. But Richard Nixon is there with no notes. He is just speaking.
Yeah.
And he knows what he's talking about. I think Richard Nixon was far, far, far superior to Donald Trump, and it was a genuine president, a failed president, failed judgment. But the crimes of Richard Nixon look petty, look like nothing at all compared to Trump.
Right.
So this is when I say he bears no resemblance to any previous president in the United States, he does not. I'd say he's probably worse than Ferdinand Marcos of the Philippines. He is probably worse, certainly, than Khrushchev.
Khrushchev was actually relatively good. It turned out.
That's why I said what I just said. Yes.
Well, and you know, Nikita Khrushchev isn't actually Russian.
He's Ukrainian.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, that was the Soviet Union at that time.
Right.
But I would go on. It takes somebody like to be really dark and sinister and cruel and greedy, like Vladimir Putin.
Well, that's our.
And I'm going to also say that Vladimir Putin is way smarter than Trump is.
Oh, I'm sure of that. That being said, you know, that's why we have our new slogan, right? That you and I were kind of working on.
Right. Rally the people.
To rally the people. Well, I mean, you know,
I'm not satisfied with where we are.
No, we can keep workshopping it. But
billionaires are questionable or whatever.
No. Remember, it's Bernie and AOC are out there with fight the oligarchy, and we're like, you know, what is the oligarchy? That might need to be defined, and that's going to be confusing to people. Our statement was fight cruel billionaires.
Well, that's you.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Yeah. I said, well, why are we doing this inside baseball for the public?
But that's my new slogan. I'm just debuting my new slogan, which is fight cruel billionaires.
Yeah. I'm not feeling that. It needs work.
We can work on it. I would say,
say this about billionaires, that they are necessarily an evil in our society, that no one should be a billionaire. Even so, Warren Buffett's a billionaire, and he's probably he seems to be a decent person,
right?
I think if we go back to Eisenhower, another president, so far a Republican, far 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 better as a human being than Donald Trump.
Clark, can I interject here just for 1 second?
But I was going to say that his tax rate was 90%.
Yes.
For people who are the wealthiest. And so what it means is that you can be very wealthy in our country, but you can't be a billionaire because we're going to tax you.
Well, I would also interject that they would probably call Eisenhower a traitor, because he was the supreme Allied commander of Allied forces in Western Europe.
Well, that doesn't make any sense to call him a traitor, even by the standards of these idiots and lunatics.
They'd
be a traitor to Donald Trump, who is a traitor.
Elon is out there complaining about Mark Kelly visiting Ukraine and telling them to continue to fight on.
Yeah, well.
Mark Kelly, the astronaut.
Again, Mark Kelly is the real American. Elon Musk is a person who's certainly on drugs, but I think that excuses him. The reality is that he is not an American in any historical notion of what that means. He is a despot. He is seeking to become a despot and certainly to access the wealth of the citizens of the United States.
Yeah.
For his own purposes, of which I think this going to Mars is preposterous. And, I know that it sounds, I think what it does is give him some sort of gravitas that he wouldn't ordinarily have. It's like, in order to survive, we have to become a multi-planetary species. And
that's actually not a bad Elon. That's actually not a bad Elon.
Yeah, I somehow cannot do Trump, but Elon,
Trump is hard to do. Trump is hard to do.
Yeah, he is. Well, unless you're good at it.
In that vein, Mark Kelly called him out. I was like, well, you know, let's see you, you know, you can talk to me later once you get on that rocket of yours, which keeps blowing up. You know, that's what Mark Kelly, that was just his troll.
Everyone wants him to go there and check out Mars.
Go check out Mars. Get on your rocket, you know?
But my point is that it's a thing that he puts out there that has no meaning because it's preposterous. And here's an alternative plan. Why don't we treat this planet right?
Right.
So it's not destroyed. I mean, that's the whole idea, that we need to become multiplanetary because we're ruining this one.
Right.
Why don't we not do that?
Right. Like, is it easier to do that?
And maybe I'll tell you one of the reasons why he doesn't like that, because not doing that means not being insanely greedy.
Right.
That's a part of any solution. And not destroying the thing that keeps us all alive.
Right.
And managing that in some kind of way, which I think, you know, democracy, as Winston Churchill said, is a terrible form of government, except for all the others that have been tried, including the one that Elon Musk wants to impose on us that he got from a rather dim baggage named Curtis Yarvin, who wrote a book called The Dark Enlightenment, and used to do a blog call in which he called himself Mencius Moldbug, and that this really attracted the attention of billionaires such as Peter Thiel, who's right. I would say an undelightful person, and one of the reasons that they really loved Mencius Moldbug, also known as Curtis Yarvin, was because he celebrated wealthy people and said, we've got to get over our fear of dictatorships if we're ever going to do anything
right
about the changing the United States. Well, this is happening now. It's a real coup. And if you're thinking, oh, he would never do a coup. Yes, he did. Yes, he would, because he did one on January 6th.
Right.
And that coup has evolved into this coup. And that's what's happening here. So I
do want to maybe get some of your impression, Clark, about the Democratic town halls that didn't quite, that certainly had 1,000 people out there and some very large ones in Southern California.
What are you talking about?
The one particularly for Dave Min, I believe Ro Khanna went to, and there was a lot of anger from Democratic constituencies that are out there saying, we need more. We need someone to resist, do something more than just sit there and do nothing. I mean, it's the sort of, these are the criticisms leveled against Chuck Schumer, right? Like, he didn't do anything.
Chuck Schumer is hopeless.
But there is a lot of fervor to do something to at least slow things down, to stop.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah, which would have happened had they not done the CR.
Right. I mean, I was sitting there going, like, you're giving them tacit approval to kind of continue to do what they do. I say shut down the government in order to keep the government.
Well, I mean, it's because the Blitzkrieg has, I think, confused them. They don't know what's going on.
Right.
And so what Chuck Schumer did was play the game in the old way in which he would have were this normal. He doesn't know what it is. He can't figure it out because he's, you know, it's exactly like Joe Biden, which is, I grew up, this is how I learned what politics were in the United States. And this has got to be part of that construct,
right?
Instead of, this is not anything that you've ever experienced before,
right?
This is a coup d'etat happening right in front of you, and you just funded it to continue.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of my impression of what happened. And it's deeply disturbing. I also do want to touch on something that's probably a little more closer to home, which are the sort of existential threats to the university and what's coming. The number that I've heard reported and bandied about for the University of California is just from the NIH cuts alone, Clark, $600 million has been frozen. That the University of California has had budgeted for on coming in, quite a bit of it, about 20-30% of it would have been indirect costs, which would have gone to facilitate research and other administrative apparatus.
Clinical trial.
Well, 30% is just the indirect cost, right? That's the cost it runs these grants and universities that spread out across the entire university. But that's also $600 million that remaining portion goes to clinical trials, goes through pathbreaking research.
Yeah.
And these are huge, huge things. And there is now a hiring freeze at the university as well.
Not every campus.
Yeah. Campuses react differently. They're in different financial straits. The NIH cuts are not proportionate, right? In other words, they affect campuses differently depending on how much NIH grants. The number I heard at UC San Diego was $200 million, which is nearly a third of what has been frozen. So that is very deep. Those can represent jobs. Those represent research that's denied. In other news, there's the deportation of some PhD students because they have protested or expressed quote unquote pro Hamas or anti-Semitic views. And also just big news today was the University of Michigan will end its DEI program, citing the Trump executive order with that. And so there are some very serious changes coming to the university, and I kind of want to get your feel as we've kind of hit a little lull. How is the vibe? It can't be good.
There's two approaches that are available to the university. One is to try to accommodate to get by. So it's like, okay, you want us to get rid of that. We'll do it. And then we'll hunker down and hope you fall.
Right.
So that we can actually do our jobs in the best way we know how, which is working. I mean, the universities of the United States are absolute powerhouses that dominate the rest of the world in terms of teaching and research and innovation. And the University of California is the goose that lays the golden egg for the economy of this state and for the United States.
Right.
But these people are so stupid. And I'm talking about MAGA.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Trump. They don't see that they're creating the medicines that give them longer and better lives. They're
right.
Creating the economies that allows them to live in the conditions in which they're obviously too spoiled to realize that, here we're living at a standard higher than 99.9% of the human race as it's existed over human history. And we still want more.
Yeah.
We want, and that makes them susceptible to the lies of Donald Trump,
right?
And they buy this stuff like "Make America Great Again" when things will be what? The economy of the United States has never been the standard of living for people in the middle class of this country. Has never been higher. It's the greatest standard of living, the highest standard of living for the biggest number of people who have ever lived in the history of this planet. And you want to make it great again from when?
Well, the better question is making it great. It's not a get from when, it's for who.
But it is them. They're still on top.
Right.
And what they want is they don't want to be threatened by smart people who are in another race. You know what? Why don't you just chill your jets, idiot, and realize that this is lifting everybody. That this is what it's about, that these really are human beings that you should recognize your common humanity with. And if you want somebody to tell you how to do it, why don't you read the Sermon on the Mount? If you say you're Christian and you're all about the Bible, why don't you read about how to treat the stranger and how to treat your neighbor and how to live a life of decency?
Right.
Read the Sermon on the Mount. But the thing is, you don't want to, and most of you never have. What you want to do is to be activated through cruelty by a demagogue to believe a lie.
Right.
And that's gonna take you where it's always taken people who have behaved like this. And I would invite you to see how Jonestown ended, because this is where we're going. You're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Well, and it's too late once you start drinking the Kool-Aid or seeing people drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, well, the point is that expression that you've heard, drink the Kool-Aid, that relates to a real event.
Right.
Where Jim Jones fooled a whole bunch of people who followed him into believing something that wasn't true. And then he told them that they needed to drink this Kool-Aid, literally Kool-Aid, in which he'd put cyanide. And they drank it and they died. And that is where we are going. This is what I have never seen such madness. And what it does to for me is to resemble what happened in Jonestown.
Right.
A mass hallucination bought by a lot of people, resulting in total destruction.
Well, not to also forget, and I always say this because I have a soft place in my heart for this politician. She's a former congresswoman, Jackie Speier. I mean, she went down with the delegation in
Jonestown, Guyana,
into Guyana, and she went down there to try and save people because there were families who wanted to see if they could make sure everybody's alive.
Actually didn't know what was happening. She went there to investigate it.
And they were shot.
Yeah.
She survived. She survived with a gunshot wound in the jungle in Guyana. And that was a horrific sort of event. And, you know, I don't think you're too far off, Clark, that some type of seminal event like that nature is the only way to sort of get out of the horror that we're beginning to see, because I'm sure if Donald Trump asked a ton of people to drink the Kool-Aid, they would.
They don't seem to be reasoning through the facts.
Yeah.
They're operating just on the emotions, and that's how he gets you. And I would say that once you see through him, you can't unsee through him.
Yeah.
And once you see, oh, I get it. I see what he's doing. It's over. But a lot of people are still in it. And the majority of these people are people who would benefit from Social Security, from healthcare, from all of the things that he is destroying.
Right.
And why is he destroying them? Because, first of all, I think he's tremendously irresponsible and mean-spirited. Also, he's greedy. So that's tax cuts.
Right.
And then also something is going on between him and Putin.
Right.
The destruction of the United States is not something he seems to be avoiding.
Right.
He's going head on right into it. And then you ask yourself this famous question in Latin, qui bono, meaning who benefits from this?
Yeah.
People who don't like the United States.
That's a lot of people.
I'd say it's one primarily.
At the moment, you know, there's going to be a lot more people who don't like the United States here in a bit. I mean, if I'm waiting to hear J.D. Vance's speech this weekend in Greenland. I mean, we're going to.
One good thing is that his speeches are awful.
Well, speaking of one good thing, we're kind of butting up against the end of the show. Let's actually have our one good thing, Clark. My one good thing is your company as we kind of endure this and whatever fashion we're going to go through. At least we're doing it together, Clark. So I value you, and I value our program.
Here we are.
Yeah.
You must have so few choices.
It's a bad week. What can I say? At work, it is absolutely terrible.
Like, normally, right? It's like that football game was a hell of a game.
March Madness is going on.
What you're doing, what you're doing is a setup where I have to.
I set the bar low. You got to clear that.
Reciprocate.
Yeah.
It's you, Tony.
It doesn't have to be me. I don't have that kind of ego that you need to feed.
Okay. Well, I think that's where it's supposed to. Well, I do think that these discussions are therapeutic. And maybe not just for us, maybe for the 9 other people who
listen. You know, I don't know. We're killing dead air sometimes, I feel, but, you know, I do encourage,
well, it's not dead air. That's the,
please don't call in. Please don't call into the KUCR line.
No,
you know,
anyway, it's what it is, which is, I think, some interesting discussion. It's completely improvised, by the way.
Oh, it is.
No script was written.
I will say that we do, as for one good thing, a good friend of mine that I've had the opportunity to do befriend used to be a columnist for the Oakland Tribune, and he's one of the preeminent deans of Asian American journalism, William G. Wong, in Oakland. He's a friend of the show, so at least we have some journalistic credence, Clark. You can feel better about that.
Mr. Wong, I apologize.
I know. He does listen to the show. He says he listens to the podcast, so at least we have one noted journalist who listens to
us. Okay. All right. Well, he's probably going to ask you to edit his name out.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But with that, I want to thank you for listening. Tune in next time for more of the Happy Hour. Good night, everyone. Good night.